This is Wendy Bauer returning with the Decatur Herald and Review, second half hour. Today is January 25th, 2016. We will begin with the death notices. Patricia Schumard from Bement. Patricia Schumard, 64, of Bement, Illinois, passed away at 12:45 a.m. on Saturday, January 23, 2016, at the Carl Foundation Hospital, Urbana, Illinois. Private services will be held in the Hines Funeral Home, Bement. Burial will be in the Bement Township Cemetery. Memorial contributions can be made to the Carl Hospice Program or the Chemo and Infusion Center at the Mills Breast Cancer Institute. Daryl L. Weddle, Pena. Daryl L. Weddle, 88, of Pena, formerly of Decatur, died Friday, January 22, 2016. Funeral services will be Tuesday, January 26th, in McCracken Dean Funeral Home at 10 o'clock a.m., with Reverend Marge Overlot officiating, burial in Mount Gilead Cemetery, Decatur. Visitation will be Monday, 6 to 8 o'clock p.m. in the funeral home. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Pena Community Hospital Foundation for Quad County Hospice, 101 East 9th Street, Pena, Illinois, 62557. Deaths listed include, for Decatur and Macon County, John C. Barkelow, Mount Zion, Carolyn Goodman, Decatur, Roy L. Graves, Decatur, Leonard H. McCrory, Sr., Decatur, Kathleen L. Melton, Decatur, Dylan Sullivan, Decatur, Donna K. Wiggins, Oakley. For Central Illinois, Stephen R. Buchanan, Greenup, Tricia Haley, Chestnut, Agnes Overy, Clinton, Patricia Schumard, Bement, and Daryl L. Weddle, Pena. Listing of pending funerals include John C. Barkelow, 70, of Mount Zion, who died Saturday, January 23rd, Dawson and Wyckoff, Mount Zion. Stephen R. Buchanan, 67, of Greenup, died Saturday, January 23rd, Barclay Funeral Chapel in Greenup. Carolyn Goodman of Decatur died Saturday, January 23rd. Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Homes in Decatur. Roy L. Graves, 84, of Decatur, died Saturday, January 23rd. Walker Funeral Service. Tricia Haley, 47, of Chestnut, died Saturday, January 23rd. Calvert Funeral Home, Clinton. Agnes Overy, 94, of Clinton, died Saturday, January 23rd, Calvert Funeral Home, Clinton. Dylan Sullivan, 21, of Decatur, died Saturday, January 23rd, Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Donna K. Wiggins, 65, of Oakley, died Saturday, January 23rd, Dawson and Wyckoff, West Wood Street Funeral Home. The listing of funerals today includes Leonard H. McCrory, Sr., 80, of Decatur, funeral at 11 a.m. in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Kathleen L. Melton, 67, of Decatur, funeral at noon in Resurrection Life Church. Now continuing with some local news, Rob Stroud, Lee News Service writer, writes an article out of Charleston. Group aims to restore theater. Members share strategy on saving Mattoon landmark. A nonprofit group discussed its plans Saturday evening for purchasing, rehabilitating, and reopening the Will Rogers Theater, which they reported is still in good structural condition. During an informational meeting at What's Cookin' Restaurant, the Will Rogers Project Board started to talk about the potential for holding community theater performances, recitals, and other events using the stage and orchestra pit at this theater. They also hope to eventually show films again there. Board Chairman Earl Halby said he and other concerned community members formed the group last summer after hearing that the mortgage holder, First Farmers Bank and Trust, started foreclosing on the nearly 78-year-old theater, located along Monroe Avenue near the Courthouse Square. Halby said the Will Rogers is structurally sound, contrary to some misconceptions in the community. He said the roof is not falling in and the water pipe that burst in 2014 only flooded the basement, not the auditorium. The whole thing is steel and concrete, which is why it is still in good condition, board member Tom Vance said later in the meeting. Halby said First Farmers Bank hired contractors to stop leaks in the marquee and the lobby and to repair the terracotta on the front of the 6 attached storefronts on the property. He later added that the theater's original decor materials are still intact. Board member David Stevens said the Will Rogers, which is on the National Register of Historic Places, was closed by AMC Theaters in 2010 and sold in 2011 to 3 investors who also had a movie theater in Streeter. The stated goals of these investors was to reopen the Will Rogers, but the theater remained closed. Stevens said the principal financial investor, who lives in Los Angeles, later stopped making payments. He said First Farmers Bank subsequently sought foreclosure. He said Catherine Tricoli, one of the other 2 investors, a married couple from Ottawa, Illinois, has since filed a counterclaim to the foreclosure motion. First Farmers Bank has motioned to strike Tricoli's counterclaim, and a hearing on this case is set for February 2nd in Coles County Circuit Court, Stevens said. The Will Rogers Project Board believes that the foreclosure will proceed and hopes to purchase the theater when it is placed on sale at the end of this process, he said. We are raising money in anticipation of owning the building, Stevens said. The board estimates that it will cost $100,000 to $150,000 to purchase the theater. Stevens said if the board does not raise enough money by the time of the foreclosure sale, they could obtain a loan from a local bank to make up the difference, or wait until they have enough money to purchase the theater from First Farmers Bank. Board member Jim Craig said they estimate it will cost approximately $250,000 with the help of donated labor to rehabilitate and reopen the Will Rogers, including replacing the air handling system. He said they do not have an estimate yet for the cost of fully restoring the theater. More information about the Will Rogers Project and how to donate to this effort is available at http://ilovethewill.com. From the Books and Literature section, Teresa Churchill, Herald and Review staff writer, writes, Bailey maintains racism still strong in U.S. From Decatur. Julius Bailey, a former visiting professor at Millikan University and one-time administrator of Main Street Church of the Living God, thinks of himself as a philosopher. Fresh off presenting to middle schoolers at Garfield Montessori School, where his daughter Heather is a 3rd grader, and reflecting on the 2nd consecutive year of all-white acting nominations announced the day before by the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, Bailey was feeling philosophical. Sure, we've made progress, but the historical resistance to recognizing the excellence of black films is still there, Bailey said. That racism endures, showing itself most graphically in the deaths of black bodies at the hands of white police officers, is the motivation for his 4th book, Racial Realities and Post-Racial Dreams, The Age of Obama and Beyond. His previous works are Jay-Z, Essays on Hip-Hop's Philosopher King, The Cultural Impact of Kanye West, and Philosophy and Hip-Hop, Ruminations on Postmodern Cultural Form. One difference is over the 190 pages of my new book, the word hip-hop doesn't appear one time, Bailey said with a grin. On a more serious note, the Chicago native intends Racial Realities to be the moral call to action that Race Matters, written by his mentor Cornel West, was in 1994. There seems to be a widespread belief among conservative pundits and politicians that legal safeguards against de jure racism have run their course, that those clinging on to the bottom rung of the social or economic ladder have simply not applied themselves, Bailey writes in the introduction. Yet racial demographics placed side by side with economic ones continue to tell us that black Americans make up a disproportionate number of this country's poorest citizens and a minuscule portion of its wealthiest ones. Bailey concludes the arrival of a so-called post-racial America is a myth after exploring the problems of poverty, militaristic police departments, Barack Obama's presidency, and America's xenophobia. Holding a Ph.D. in philosophy and education from the University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana, Bailey has taught since 2008 at Wittenberg University in Springfield, Ohio, where he is a professor of philosophy. He is 43 years old. At this point in my life, I am ready to give my 2 cents worth on how a social conscious Christian academic can love America and be critical at the same time, he said. About the book, the title is Racial Realities and Post-Racial Dreams, The Age of Obama and Beyond, written by Julius Bailey. It's a paperback, 190 pages. List price is $22.95, and it's available on Amazon and www.broadviewpress.com. And now the Dear Dr. Roach column by Dr. Keith Roach for the Herald and Review. Beginning with, how long should Fosamax regimen last? Dear Dr. Roach, I'm a 75-year-old woman of Thai descent. I've been on Fosamax regimen for over 8 years. I suffered a femur fracture and a fall approximately 2 years ago. About the first thing the attending orthopedic surgeon asked me was, are you taking Fosamax? I received no explanation about a possible connection. No physician has told me to discontinue it, but my dentist commented that he didn't think the drug should be continued for more than 4 years. Do you have an opinion about the correct length of time to use this medication? Should I switch to another osteoporosis product? Answer. Women of Asian descent are at higher risk for development of osteoporosis and fractures. Fosamax, alendronate, and other members of the class of anti-osteoporosis drugs called bisphosphonates improve bone mineral density by reducing the activity of osteoclasts, the cells that break down bone. Many studies have confirmed that the use of these drugs in appropriate people reduces fracture risk. What isn't clear is how long to use these medications. One study from 2006 showed that stopping alendronate after 5 years only slightly increased fracture risk, and the authors concluded that in lower-risk women, it is reasonable to consider stopping, but high-risk women likely would benefit from taking it beyond 5 years. It may be just that the orthopedic surgeon wanted to be sure you were taking appropriate medicine to prevent fracture. However, I think your orthopedic surgeon may have been concerned about an unusual side effect called an atypical femur fracture. On X-ray, these are described as subtrochanteric or femoral shaft fractures. It seems that these are more likely in women who have been on medicines like Fosamax for more than 5 years. The hypothesis is that if osteoclasts are suppressed too much, then the bone can't repair small cracks that might lead to the bone becoming brittle. However, I want to emphasize that these atypical fractures are unusual and that overall, more women get benefit from avoiding a typical fracture than are harmed by getting an atypical fracture from long-term use. Similarly, your dentist is worried about a condition called osteonecrosis of the jaw, which is extremely rare with Fosamax. You need to find out whether the fall you had 2 years ago was typical or atypical. I suspect that we soon will enter an era where it will be possible to reliably see if medications are working at the optimal level. Some physicians already use blood or urine tests to evaluate bone metabolism, but it isn't yet a standard recommendation. Finally, you should be sure that your vitamin D level is appropriate and that you are getting enough calcium, preferably from diet. The osteoporosis pamphlet furnishes details on how to prevent this universal condition. Readers can obtain a copy by writing Dr. Roach, book number 1104, 628 Virginia Drive, Orlando, Florida, 32803. Enclose a check or money order for $475 with the recipient's printed name and address. Prostate and vitamin D. Dear Dr. Roach, I'm a 70-year-old male with an enlarged prostate. About 2 years ago, my doctor discovered that I had a very low level of vitamin D and prescribed 50,000 units of vitamin D2 twice a week. After a couple of weeks of taking this high dose, I began having to get up more at night to urinate. The problem worsened to having to urinate every half hour to 45 minutes. I stopped the high dosage, and within another week, my nightly urination diminished to an average of twice a night. I don't know if that reaction is rare, but I just wanted to relate my experience. Answer. I haven't seen that, but I very rarely use the 50,000 dosage regimen. I prefer 1 to 2,000 IU of vitamin D3, as it does not need to be activated by sunlight, which is a problem with the D2 formulation, especially in winter. I appreciate your writing. Then, Joe Trimmer for the Herald and Review. Prairie Talk. Technology claiming us all. It has taken me a while, but I finally figured out what I am. I'll pause while your imaginations run wild, and I'm willing to bet none of you even came close. I'm a Luddite. And again, your imaginations are running wild. In 1811, Ned Ludd, an 18th century workman, destroyed a knitting frame. In the early 19th century, the term Luddite was applied to English workmen who destroyed a labor-saving machinery as protest. Today, it is one who is opposed especially to technological change. But with all that, I'm not all in my opposition. Electricity, television, running water, automobiles, air conditioning and heat, and, with an asterisk, the telephone. All these, and probably a few others, have made our lives better. But they came with costs. Robots and computers have eliminated many human jobs. Ah, you say, it's faster and cheaper. Is it really? We seem to sacrifice a lot for patients. I want it right now. Facebook, Twitter, and other forms of communication are done with little thought. If I receive a written letter or even a note, I know it took some time and thought. Obviously, these are times, particularly with the military, where instant data is life-saving. Likewise, with the advances in medicine and its applications. Does anyone really care or need in the mall, can't decide, red or blue, or any such insane messages? Computers have, are, or will take over too much of our lives. I love the written word. Texting, while communicating, has become an eraser of words by substituting abbreviations. Character limitation. Can you imagine if Thomas Jefferson tried to write the Declaration of Independence today? Or Lincoln's Gettysburg Address? Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech? While I get a few phone calls, I treasure hearing from friends, literally hearing. The even more rare written letter is read and reread. Someone had taken, or is taking, one of the most precious commodities we have, time to talk to me. No computer, other than our minds, can come close to replicating that feeling. My phone package has caller ID, call waiting, and a few other bells and whistles. I don't use them. Sure, I hate the robocalls ad infinitum, but there's a mild adrenaline rush when I hear a recognizable voice. Camera phones can capture a moment, but more and more they are used for gotcha moments or recording someone else's moment, wanted or unwanted. Context can be lost, and in the process, lives can be forever altered. Photoshopping is downright scary. We smile when Forrest Gump is inserted in many true historical situations, but think about the historical implications that are possible with this device. A snip here, a cut there. I've said before, When I was a superintendent, I made sure my district had the latest computers and innovations available. I knew and still know that's where we are going, but I will not. I'm writing this on my trusty typewriter. It has one line of memory, kinda like me. I like writing and telling stories. My spell check function didn't recognize the word texting. Bless her heart. From the local pages at work section, meet Bruce Wayne Jeffrey, executive director of the Boys and Girls Club of Decatur. Hometown, St. Louis. Family, his wife Brittany. Education, bachelor's degree in exercise science with a concentration in sports management from Millikan University. My I'd rather be bumper sticker would read, I'd rather be on my motorcycle. Life is too short not to enjoy every moment. Live free and ride hard. Hobbies and interests? Movies, reading, football, and working out. My first job, Chick-fil-A in St. Louis. Why I do what I do. While everyone is saying why they don't want to help our youth, my philosophy has always been that it takes one to reach one. Although I didn't have a Boys and Girls Club in my neighborhood, I grew up with some of the same tough life experiences as many of our members face. Personal approaches to challenges. Excuses are tools of the incompetent. They build monuments to nothing, and those who use them are seldom good at anything else. Community involvement. There are too many to list. I just enjoy being part of helping Decatur be a better place for all people, especially our youth. Tell us a little about the Boys and Girls Club of Decatur. The Boys and Girls Club is an after-school program for youth between the ages of 7 to 18. I like to think of us as a one-stop shop for a special population of young people that sometimes face extreme challenges. Boys and Girls Clubs are a safe place to learn and grow, all while having fun. It is the place where great futures are started each and every day. What does the executive director do? Laugh. You name it. It gets done. My number one focus is providing a safe, conducive environment for youth to learn and grow. I also am responsible for fundraising, marketing, staffing, and the overall day-to-day functions to operate the club. The club has a special brand in the community, so my role is to enhance the overall mission of the club. My philosophy for any nonprofit executive is whatever it takes to get the job done. Why is it so important to have a Boys and Girls Club in the community? There are very few options for young people after they get out of school for the day. Studies across the country have shown that the highest times for youth to get into trouble is between the hours of 3 and 8 p.m. That's why we are here, to ensure kids have a safe, positive place they can call a home away from home. I think what makes us special is that our membership fee for the year is only $1. That's right, $1. Many, many years ago, we wanted to ensure that our program was affordable for any youth that wanted to attend. We haven't changed our fee. That way, any family, big or small, can benefit from the services of the club. Education is obviously a very important part of your mission. Tell us a little about your education programming. Every member that attends our program is required to turn in their most recent report card. If a member has a D or F for that quarter, they are required to attend our Power Hour program. Power Hour's underlying philosophy is that the benefits of homework are not only academic, but also behavioral and social. Beyond the academic benefit, consistent homework completion helps young people develop valuable organizational and interpersonal skills, including time management, prioritizing, task completion, and working cooperatively with others. These skills are necessary for achievement in school and are a foundation for a successful life. Getting kids to eat better and maintain a healthy lifestyle is capturing a lot of headlines. What are you doing to address this issue? In 2014, we were able to partner with United Way, ADM, St. Mary's Hospital, and the Young Philanthropist Group of Macon County to start a Healthy Lifestyles program. This program is a comprehensive health and wellness initiative that strives to improve the overall health of members by increasing their daily physical activity, teaching them good nutrition, and helping them develop healthy relationships. This program focuses on the body, mind, and soul of each member. In the end, the goal is for all kids to grow up and be working members of the community. You recently added a career path program. What is this? In 2014, the club took on the opportunity to partner with one of Decatur's biggest employers, ADM. Transitioning from being a high school senior to an employee is hard with the lack of career opportunities offered to our youth right out of high school. Through planning and meetings with ADM employees, the club had 3 former members who were seeking career opportunities after graduation. ADM generously provided these youths with a mentor and guidance on how ADM could offer them the career path they were looking for. After several weeks of hands-on training and mentoring, all 3 former members were afforded the opportunity to gain full-time employment with ADM. The goal is that all club members that don't plan on attending college will be able to be gainfully employed with a great company like ADM. How important are volunteers and local businesses to the success of Boys and Girls Clubs? Volunteers are the backbone of our organization, and their expertise is needed. Time is the most important thing you can give to a kid. Our individual talents are the keys to helping inspire the next generation to be great. We all have something to give. Why not share your gift with kids that don't get to experience the world at large? Your talents are helping form the next leaders in our community. No gift is too large or small, whether it's school supplies for kids or incentives to help motivate youth. The club has always been very thankful for the generosity shown by the Decatur community. How can someone get involved? Our after-school program has the biggest need for volunteers. With more than 120 members that attend our program daily, our youth need your support. That support can come in the form of helping with homework or shooting a game of pool. All we require for you to be involved in our program is a background check and a brief volunteer orientation. And finally, the page A3 briefs for Monday. Effingham, man hit by truck, dies. Illinois State Police said a Beecher City man was killed Saturday night when he was struck by a pickup truck as he walked along a highway in rural Effingham County. The victim was identified as William J. Coleman, 40, who was pronounced dead at the scene of the accident. Police said the incident happened at 11:32 p.m. on Moccasin Road, 2 miles west of Lake Sarah. The pickup truck involved was driven by Nathaniel T. Followell, 20, of Altamont, who was not listed as being injured. The accident remained under investigation Sunday by the State Police Crash Reconstruction Unit and the Effingham County Coroner's Office. In Decatur, breach of peace, police made 2 arrests early Saturday morning after responding to complaints of blaring music and street racing vehicles on a Decatur street. Patrol officers had been alerted at 2:53 a.m. by residents in the 800 block of West Main Street about loud music. Police ended up citing men age 33 and 27 for ordinance violations involving breach of the peace. This has been Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review, January 25th, 2016. I look forward to reading with you again soon.